frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Bubatrap, our 5-year mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new shows and new video games, to boldly go where no woman with a fro has gone before.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Over 40 and Unapologetically Nerdy. I'm your host, Felicia Baxter, or Tenfro. I'm going to be just talking about simply nerdy things. Aliens do exist, y'all. We need to just stop it. And what do Hubble, Gregor, and the CERN Superglider have in common? Also talking about all things Star Trek and reading from my own foray into sci-fi. And I hope you enjoy this episode, and thank you for listening. That is Jerry Goldsmith and the Royal Scottish National Orchestra, entitled from Star Trek First Contact. And I think that's a great way to start this part of the podcast, where I'll be talking about the significance of the image of the day, and why I think there are aliens, and because we got a lot of proof. I mean, first of all, let's just start there. NASA's image of the day, it just brings up all the beauty that surrounds us. And as an American taxpayer, we do pay a grip, you know, for what the space program, what Elon Musk and JPL, a lot of the scientific community has really been able to share with us. And it's all public domain, which is amazing. And one of the images that I actually have in the full podcast notes was given to us by the Hubble Space Telescope. It features a impressive portrait of the M163 nebula. It's an example of a bipolar planetary nebula located within the Scutum or the Shield constellation. It's believed to have been formed when a star at the center of the nebula sheds a huge quantity of material from its outer layers, leaving behind a spectacular cloud of gas and dust. So you get this basically double bubble donut kind of twisted picture that is spectacular to the naked eye. But when it's blown up and clarified, it actually absolutely looks amazingly beautiful. But I not only say that, I basically have been thinking, and one of the precepts of my my first science fiction work is the premise being predicated on the importance of the space program and all of the discoveries. The now retired Kepler and its ability to have located several galaxies beyond our own. We got 3,000 planets and counting. There's a whole rendition of the TRAPPIST system, which is made up of several exoplanets that could actually support life. And I say all of that to say, why would we not be alone? Who is to say that could we be some big experiment? What was described as being hell? Could it have been some nuclear reaction gone wrong? Maybe, but I just know that I'm not so vain or arrogant to think that we are not alone, that we are alone. We aren't. I honestly believe that. have other extraterrestrials made contact? I honestly believe that they have, or they've just been waiting because we haven't said anything or did anything warranting them to want to speak with us. I think as humankind and as a species, we are still evolving, but we are still trapped within the constructs of our minds, within the constructs of polite society. And I don't think we're I just don't think we're interesting enough to extraterrestrials for them to want to speak to us. And it's okay. It's just that, what do we have to do to become evolved and to have things, to not want these things that keep us trapped here? Do we have the capability, or are there a group of people that have the capability to be interesting enough to speak to someone that's not even from this world? Most of us, like myself, have enough issue to trust and to even want to talk to the next door neighbor. Can you imagine trying to make that same connection with somebody from outside of this physical world? I don't think so. But what I do think, we always have to strive to be better than we are today. And that's not a bad thing when you think about it, you know. This is another Jerry Goldsmith theme from Voyager, the main title. This is not one of my most favorite spinoffs. I like the interaction with the Borg. I like the strength, kinda, of the Captain Janeway. But then I just recently saw something online where her relationship with Jerry Ryan, who played Seven of Nine, was what they called a bit difficult. That means that probably the Janeway character, she was difficult on and off set. And the way that they promoted the show also made it difficult, because I think the guy that played Harry Kim, he was complaining about how he had to pay for his own publicist and blah, 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 blah. But that's neither here nor there. But I'm not really getting into that quite yet. What I am going to talk about a little bit more, which I was completely struck with, is that what I mentioned in the last episode was how Hubble and Kepler and several other telescopes are granting us the privilege to look beyond our atmosphere to the beauty of the universe. And we need the energy to get there. It seems that Elon Musk has made it, the space race, more affordable. And we're getting back to the moon, because, you know, we haven't been to the moon since 74, I believe, and possibly make it all the way to Mars. But what if we don't have to wait that long? What if we have capabilities to get beyond our galaxy and get there a lot faster than that? I think it's going to take some experimentation. But suppose that there are other beings that could actually give us a leg up if we are perceptive enough to be able to use the technology just to explore our universe and to get knowledge for knowledge's sake. I think that's possible. And I think the type of power that we're going to need to get beyond our galaxy, we may be closer to it than what you actually think. The technology and the knowledge that is coming from the super collider at CERN is look into what power that we actually have at our disposal, and we don't have to destroy our Earth to be able to do it. I firmly believe that. But what I did not know is that we were right in the middle of a multi-billion dollar project to build a super collider of, in all places, Texas. It's right in Waxahachie in South Texas, and we were $1 billion in, and in 2016, Congress scrapped it. And this is what I think happened. We got a fool in the White House that obviously doesn't understand the importance of science and what that would actually mean. So they were happily wanting to defund Obamacare, and they wanted to defund this project and a lot of other scientific and endowment, arts endowment, because number one, they have no interest in it, and they wanted to spend the money in all of these things. When we could, and what I found out was this super collider was to be even better than what the CERN over in Switzerland was. We could have been making more scientific discoveries, and they wouldn't have lost or put $1 billion into the ground to build this massive machinery. This could have given us another one-upman, because of course we're going to build a super collider, and of course it's going to be better than the Europeans. They said that they have the capability of colliding particles 40 times faster than what they could actually do over at CERN, and why wouldn't we want to do that? We have the capability to build this, take this technology and build it, and utilize it to harness that power to be beyond rockets. What do we have the capabilities to create stable and source the energy for a stable wormhole? Why can't we have that capability? And you mean to tell me that y'all were not willing to give another $1 billion for something that could give us a technological one-up in this world versus building a wall that is not going to be finished and the Mexicans had already tunneled under? That is a waste of time, a waste of energy, and it is the complete ineptitude of politicians to think beyond what they don't understand. If they don't understand it, they're going to defund it. And we had a dumbass in the White House that would never have considered funding something as important as the U.S. super collider. You want to make America great again? You stop making fun of scientists just because you're such a dumbass and you don't understand what they're trying to do. And you are so short-sighted that you would make fun of anybody that completely gets why it is important for the research to be and why we need to be better and have the technology right here in the United States instead of having to go overseas and something that was obsolete by the time it went offline for upgrades in 2018. If you can't understand the basic need for something this technological greatness and the reproducibility and what it would mean for humanity, you really don't need your seat in any political scene. And that's why I politics and a lot of these politicians, they don't get it. They make a lot of stupid decisions based on their feelings and their instincts, which are flawed, and they only represent a small minority of people that don't represent people that got some damn sense. So we got this $1 billion tunnel in the ground going to waste when it should be up and running, and it should be giving the Europeans a run for their money. And we got the physics, we got the math to be able to put it up and to be able to make the discoveries that really did make America great. That is what that represents. It represents fallacy and lack of understanding. And I hate waste, but that is wasteful. Maybe that is going to be my now, my, I'm going to start a new hashtag. Finish the USA Super Collider. That's my new hashtag, because that is what we need. We need to move out of fiction and move into reality. And these are the types of things that are going to become a reality and make us, from a scientific standpoint, make us become advanced to be able to build the machinery or to build the power that is really going to get us in beyond this galaxy. I'm all for getting back to the moon, but we were already there. I'm all for getting to Mars, but why wouldn't it be possible to visit the planets in the TRAPPIST system in Aquarius, which is 40,000 light years away? Why not? Just saying. But that's one nerd's opinion. You don't have to agree with it, but I wish somebody with some damn sense would just listen. And that is my lead into my Star Trek corner. Again, that is Star Trek Voyager, the main title, by Jerry Goldsmith. One of my favorite Star Trek Instagram accounts are the ships of Star Trek. And it seems like the producers and the public, producers or the publishers of that particular Instagram account are really into the next generation, because they have, it's heavy on the NCC 1701 A through G. I'm not mad at them, but I'm also really happy when they actually, beyond my food posts, they actually post different ships. And in this particular post, they talk about a ship concept. This is Deviant Artist Ian Richards, but it's the Scimitar. It looks and resembles a bat. I don't know if this is going to be one of the new battle cruisers from either, well, the Romulans have gotten blown up if you look at Picard, but if this is going to be one of those either from the Klingons or even from the Cardassians, who knows? The Jem'Hadar, I'm not sure where they are going to be in the storyline, but this is a bad butt looking ship, and I pretty much dig it. It looks like it's going to be pretty maneuverable. And they also have another model by Deviant Artist Tobias Richer from Lightworks. A lot of these ships, if you get much further along in Star Trek Online than I ever could be, you could actually get the privilege of utilizing these as your battle cruisers or a part of your fleet. But I've never made it that far into the series, so I'm not sure. And I'm actually, but so check that out, Ships of Star Trek on Instagram. I think you'll enjoy just flipping through and looking at all of the Deviant Artists and their creations. And I always go back to a lot of the NASA photos of the day of the different planets. I swear that some of those artists get their inspiration from the planets that are from NASA and all of the space agencies, and they utilize it in their art to create this other world, the other worlds that we actually see in Star Trek today. I'm still coming around the corner, finishing up Star Trek Next Gen Greater Than the Sun by Christopher Bennett. I'm actually really enjoying this book. I'm enjoying the fact that these aliens have their existence. They can't be assimilated to a certain extent. They have the power. This is another showdown. Every time the Federation beats the Borg back, they come back with a vengeance. Species A147 spank them into submission. And then there was another another book that I'm going to be reading after this one, where Captain Janeway, she takes Voyager in to go and do battle with the Borg, and then she's assimilated and she becomes their queen, and they have to rescue her. Well, she doesn't get rescued. I think she ends up dying in that battle, that last battle. But in this particular book, it takes place after Jean-Luc Picard marries Dr. Crusher. She annoys me, but at least Guinan shows up again on the new and improved Enterprise, and they go into battle into a sector or another nebula where they meet these no angels who are basically mimicry. They are living their organisms, but they are at peace. They are letting the Borg attempt to gain knowledge and to assimilate them. I honestly don't think that the Borg are going to be successful, but they want, and they're trying to figure out if they're going to figure that out, that trying to assimilate them is futile, and they're going to have to figure something out to deal with the unassimilated, the independent Borg, as well as the Federation. And neither, they're not going to allow either group to hurt the other one to let each of the other group exist. When they could, they could open up a slipstream and chunk either one of them across the galaxies. But the technology that is at the heart of the slipstream is what the Borg want. So they're going to continue to try to assimilate and to conquer this race of people by any means necessary. And of course, Picard and the Federation is not going to allow that to happen. But I'm very much interested because they're trying to convince the no angels that they're on the right. But I don't think that this higher being is completely completely convinced. In the next episode, I'll get further along in how that all turns out. And if you get the chance to navigate to Chatterbooks, you can actually purchase this. I think it's only about $5 on my website right now, my online bookstore. Star Trek, The Next Generation, Greater Than the Sum by Christopher L. Bennett. And I hope you will enjoy as much as I've enjoyed reading it. Hey, here's a little bit more from Star Trek Voyager. That is John Williams, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Wild Signals. And we all know, from what I remember from the movie, the aliens just got tired of them messing around with them with these signals and sounds. And I think they end up blowing up the Black Hawk helicopter that was transmitting the sounds. And it's how, what a great way or segue for me to read my first foray into sci-fi listeners. I started writing this because it's a combination of multiple different things. between Star Trek and the black sci-fi writer, and then my historical romance. There's not a lot of black people that are writing sci-fi at this time. A lot of them are skinny, goofy white women, but there's not a lot of black women that's doing it. So I would try my hand, and could I actually potentially write something that somebody would like to read? And I would hope that people would. So here we go. This is from prologue from listeners. I actually wrote this last week, but then I accidentally deleted the blog post in an effort to put it behind a paywall. But I think you'll still enjoy the rewritten because not only did I go back and rewrite the prologue, I went and wrote an extension of the introduction of the Lundgren family. Of course, one of the main computational theoretical physicist and astrophysicist has a fro, and she lives in Tennessee. And her mountain man that looks like St. John from 90 Day Fiance, at least he does in my mind, because they personally they're multi-billionaires or like beyond the Elon Musk variety, but they own their own radio optical telescope over in one on the mountain, but. This is me reading. Listeners, we are not alone. Other sentient beings try to communicate with us for thousands of millennia, or maybe that's millennia. Thousands of millennia. I'm glad I can. The communications were mistaken, and entire religions created, altars built, and the communicants burned as heretics, signs mistaken. The earliest contacts recorded pictorially on the walls of the caves, again carved into stone tablets in the Saharan Desert, blueprints given to Egyptians, to the Mayans, to the Aztecs. Druids created the first listening device, so they waited patiently. So they waited just for just the one or a couple to be born, and they were born for it. She, Felicity Lundgren, née Box, an African American born to a drug addicted mother, ill-equipped to raise a child whose overdose would leave her to the care of her grandmother, Mabel Box, in Tennessee. Her mountain man of a husband, Dial Lundgren, whose hippie parents would cloister themselves in a Buddhist monastery in Nepal, leaving their children to migrate to Oxford, then to Caltech to make the discoveries that would bring this unlikely couple together. She is a savant-level astrophysicist and mathematical genius with the eidetic memory. She remembers everything she ever reads and understands. He is a walking code cracker, sees patterns in everything, large data in his specialty. He can explain it to his wife, and she can create the mathematical models to explain and code it into a supercomputer, which she creates. The processing of data from their personal radio optic telescope on Squirrel Shot Mountain, which they partially own with the Tennessee Valley Power Authority. The story of their ability to own a mountain and their multi-billionaire status due to a purchase of a block of Bitcoin in the early days is a source of legend, but it was their work in the recursive algorithms that would allow them to detect the communication streams from their telescopes. The communications would spark World War III or civil unrest with peace to be brokered by the enlightened ones. Houston, we have contact. The Kit House. In the early 20th century, Sears Roebuck would create housing for a newly minted middle class, and pretentious one at that. This is a bygone time of superior American manufacturing. Many of such houses were floated down the Mississippi and Tennessee rivers. Arguably, it can be said Chattanooga is the city that Sears built. Most have stayed in the same families for years. Never available to the likes of Felicity or Dahl, So with a fair chunk of their new billions, they would have a 3D printed replica created and assembled on the mountainside, Squirrel Shot Mountain. All the internal living spaces into a well-stocked library of rare books from every discipline and genre. You walk through the entrance into the formal dining room and then into the chef's kitchen to find a Birkenstocked mountain man, Dahl Lundgren. He walks back from the kitchen with two steaming cups, the electrified cups, the creation that resembled the styrofoam cups of the instant ramen noodle variety, but the heating element to keep the contents warm, with a sealed stainless steel top imprinted with either the Enterprise Model E or other starships, with a special holster for the lightsaber fashion chopsticks of R2-D2 that light up with either blue or red. While the water boils, he glimpses the breathtaking falls through his window. This is what super nerds with unlimited disposable income can buy or create. One of the many creations they created in their on-site lab. He walks back through the gardens, noting the beauty of the flowers, the trickling water from the creek flowing under the connector bridge, coming from the tumbling waters from their own personal waterfalls. Fun fact, over half of the waterfalls in Tennessee are on private lands, and they're not monitored by the Department of the Interior or the Department of Forestry. He pauses, as he does several times a day, at the glassed in enclosure as the waterfall cascading down to the rocky face of the mountain. He turns his head slightly to the right, pausing to smile at the scene of the fraternal twins, a boy, Nigel, and a girl, River, age 6, rollerblading, playing hockey in a side playroom. He continues into the open space resembling the old Mission Control in Houston. His wife sitting at the bank of silver custom curved Apple computer monitors, typing rapidly and frowning. There is a cat, Ruby, curled up on her perch next to Dahl's workstation with three dogs representing a variety of breeds chasing the rowdy children back and forth, careful not to get too close to get crushed or rolled on by one of the children. Thank heavens for soundproofing. He pauses, gazing at this bunker of technology. Air service with terabytes of space, privately owned optical radio telescopes, billions of dollars in technology owned by Dahl and Felicity solely. Why here? Why in the Tennessee Valley? A bit of backstory. Dahl is of Dutch extraction, but immigrated from South Africa during the unrest of the apartheid years with his sister and parents, spending much of his formative years in boarding schools and then finally leaving his parents in a monastery in Nepal, contemplating existence with the monks. He then comes to America on a student visa for this final work on his first PhD in quantum mechanics, where he met the almost silent Afro-bespeckled geek from Tennessee and North Georgia. She was a wonder kid, graduating from Georgia Tech at the age of 16, and then she was invited to a Caltech program for astrophysics and quantum mechanics. He walked into the student labs late one night, noticing the rapidity of the typing and singular concentration of the young woman. He came upon his as-yet lifelong partner looking over her shoulder as the brilliant 18-year-old wrote recursive algorithm and accompanying code on the IBM supercomputer. Amazing, he would say in hushed reference. She dumped, taken aback by the massive long-haired man standing in front of her. Then she would gather herself, narrowing her eyes. Have you taken a wrong turn from the USC football field? Yeah, unless you think they would miss a 2 left feet dork from South Africa. I think I'm going to be good. She snickers. He continues, I'm in the right place. She laughs in spite of herself. She wanted him to speak more because of the musical quality of his accent, which I'm not going to try to mimic. And talk, they would. She had found an unexpected kindred spirit hallowed halls of Caltech that would lead to several successful and lucrative collaborations and scientific discoveries. The initial collaboration led to a first place prize in the newly created Degrassi grant, which was $50,000. With other Star Trek inspired discoveries proved by real science. But overall, their voracious curiosity over science and the universe would fuel their obsession for discovery and monetization would attract big corporate names like JPL, NASA, the military, not just in the U.S., but internationally. Google Alphabet, Macintosh Envision, even Elon Musk came knocking, but the repressive nature of typical academic and corporate structure was not at all appealing to them. They would become lifelong consultants. They have the flexibility to pick and choose who they work for and what they choose to pursue. But over 11 years, while they were doing work at Tau Observatory in Sweetwater, Tennessee, they would rediscover a box of their Star Trek memorabilia. The box resembled a Borg cube. Inside were several jump drives with numbered starships, all of the Enterprise forms and models. They looked at each other, pulling out and inserting each drive with the computer beeping and whirling, and each ending of the processes, there would be as displayed a subsequent letter, each of the algorithms running successfully with a final tally of 250,000 bitcoins, not USD. And they were worth a whopping $15. They made these purchases at the beginning of the Bitcoin craze. And they watched at that time when they were worth a breathtaking 114 per Bitcoin. They had a cool $29 million sitting on jump drives in a Borg cube memorabilia box. They would continue working at Tau and the community college for another 2 years, acquiring more of the elusive currency. And then Bitcoin would reach an outrageous peak at $40,000 per Bitcoin. Their combined worth would then reach over $10 billion. They would convert just enough Bitcoin to about $500 million USD. And building the life neither could ever imagine. The mountains along the Tennessee and throughout the valley held some 100 waterfalls, most on private land. They would discover one of the largest, replete with hot water springs on the old Fort Farms. They would live well below their means during those years at Roan and spend time hiking the mountains of East Tennessee. Under the direction of a cave diver original from Bali, they splunking the caves and then used underground submarines for miles into the mountain range. Two parts of the underground tributary that fed the massive underground lake, but the rest, the unexpected falls cascading to the creek at the back of the old Ford farmhouse. They would use their millions to 3D print a site, a facade, replica of the Sears Kit House, the Magnolia Plan. They were excavating to construct a telescope and to house their air terabyte massive server. In the caves, which were former or mining operation long since played out. they would build hurricane impact windows constructed over the connecting bridge that led to the entrance of the cave, or side of the cave anyways, but was protected from the cascading falls, waterfalls, I should say, that ran alongside. The workspace would be a combination of living quarters and amazing bathrooms housing the supercomputer server and lab to process all the data coming from their personal optical radio frequency telescope. Because of this depth in the mountain and the computational unit stayed a cool 59 degrees, perfect for the server, perfect for optimal server operation and their 2,000 bottles of wine. The Batman-style technological grotto, and together they were free to explore the world from their super gaming chairs by tapping into the satellite and cameras as the worldwide government spying on their citizens. They also began to do research and create calculators, basic how to tune out the universal noise of space, cleaning up images and other readings from stellar bodies, but their work did not escape the notice of anyone wanting to infringe on the technology, explaining their copyright infringement litigation with Tesla and Microsoft, as well as spying by the Chinese and Russian governments. Both were interested in using the enhanced version of the technology to spy on its citizens and the rest of the world, but they never could quite get the technology, and they would attempt to steal it over and over again. However, included in the technology itself were several Trojan and self-destruct phases that were incorporated into the programs. The perfect technology built by ultimate hackers. One of the programs sends out a tracker device, so not only did it shut down the system when you attempted to break the encryption, it sent out a beacon to the authorities to let them know exactly who had stole their technology. It was rumored that it was such a device or program that had crippled the Iranian government for several weeks and released by one such attempt by High Tech 4, which spy program that they installed within their software was unleashed. Dahl walks through the automatic doors upon approaching his wife, Felicity, squinting at the display and setting down the cup of noodles. She distractedly picks up and taps the screen and takes a large bite, slurps up the soup. Swallowing and saying, "The Chinese are at it again." The wall monitors lights up, vertical, inducing swoop into the cameras, and what appears to be some government or office with Asian technicians all running around frantically and monitors all with snow and there's no audio. Then they note on the flat screen, the Chinese trading platform plummets 2,000 points before trading is also suspended. Felicity yells, "Thieving pieces of shit, that's what they get." Followed by a gutter, harumph, and a string of Klingon curses and high fives. Dahl takes his seat and scratches Ruby's belly, the cat purring with contentment. He then notices other work on Felicity's split screen, calling up analytic bytes of information. They have been analyzing large amounts of data, which the computer translated into repeating patterns on several bands. Dahl slips some of his noodles, saying to Felicity between chews, "Did you notice this?" Felicity looks and calls up the data on her screen. "Yeah, when I analyze the data, that is what the computer created. Now, when I add that recursive algorithm, I get this." She clicks a few buttons, replacing the images of the panicked Asian workers with the ghostly outline of an image. Dahl sets down his cup and says, "Shit, what am I looking at?" What's the source? Felicity says, given the degradation of the signal, the source is calculated some 40,000 light years from here. Maybe even from the Aquarius cluster, somewhere from the TRAPPIST system. And there's more. We can isolate the specific wavelengths and add the additional algorithms running a loop processor. Also, the computer reads these waveforms kind of like syntax. Yeah, it's like a small video clip of the third kind, and we can project the image. Dial sputters. Wait, what the fuck? This is a holographic image from outer space? Some first class, first contact encounters of third kind shit? Wait. We're not the only ones listening. Does anyone else know? Felicity says, I don't think so, but we can't tell anyone yet. Let's work on this a little bit more. And that's how I ended. And I reworked the TRAPPIST prologue. You can get this in its entirety, as well as the next chapter, which I'll read in my next posting, The One, because that's where I'll go into this extraterrestrial race and why and how they chose to communicate with these goofy nerds in the Tennessee mountains. And that's how I'm actually going to end this episode of Over 40 and Unapologetically Nerdy. I'm absolutely having a really good time trying my hand at sci-fi fiction and figuring out ways that I can put it behind the paywall as premium content, because it does take me a lot longer to write up these scripts or that parts of the show into something coherent. And I'm also thinking about taking another writing class, as well as a screenwriting class in the future. If you got someone that doesn't understand your quirks and people are still getting on your nerves by going massless, please navigate to shipabagofdicks.com. I'm sure they have masks with penises on them, or you could just ship them the proverbial gummy penis, because people are still doing stupid crap. I wish I could just ship all the Republican governors a big 18-foot dark black penis, because they're all dumb, and some Republican senators, they ain't got no damn sense. But that's just me and my gripe with stupidity. I don't like waste, and I hate stupidity. But I hope you don't think this show was stupid, and you enjoyed, and you actually learned something, and I was able to demonstrate just how much I love learning, and just how much we should try to get to learn more, get to know other things, and just be a part of humanity, and making sure others in humanity are learning. And that's how I'm going to end it. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Over 40 and Unapologetically Nerdy. And good night. Until next time.